You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Yo, it is.
It actually is.
It is another edition of the IO podcast, the High Hopes podcast. It's been so long, I can't even get the name out, Jack. We missed all you beautiful people. It's James Seltzer. Jack Fritz coming your way. We are back, Jack. Much like the... No, not back.
Very not back.
Not great, Bob.
Doing the exact opposite of being back is what the Phillies are doing right now. Still haven't won a series in over a month.
July 26th, right?
Don't worry. According to Gabe Kapler, they are in a fantastic position to strike.
I've done a really good job of not letting the things that Gabe Kapler says annoy me.
Oh, I don't care.
Because I don't care. I just don't care. Say whatever you want publicly. Handle it in the locker room. It's a little annoying now, Gabe. Like, listen. Like, come on. Come on, Gabe.
We're in an optimal position to strike.
Come on, Gabe. Yeah, Jack. 4.5 back in both the division and the wild card. I mean, I think we should just write the wild card off. There's no way they're jumping all those teams, very likely. Look, division's not over mathematically, technically, all that stuff. But, I mean, this team can't beat the Mets. They can't beat the Marlins, Jack. They can't beat the Nationals. The three next teams on their schedule, they've lost four series against those guys in the last, you know, five series or whatever. Haven't won a series since July 26th. Why should anyone have any faith that this team's going to turn it around the last minute here?
It's not like they're going to turn around and all of a sudden be a good playoff team. Like, if they make the playoffs, it's because they're going to limp in. Like, and the Braves are probably going to collapse. Like, the Braves' bullpen is just bad enough to where they can make this interesting. But, like, you can't feel good about, like, them making the playoffs. Like, them making the playoffs, like, a month ago, you're saying, like, awesome. Like, it's going to be so much fun when they make the playoffs. Now it's just like... Oh my God! Really? Like,
just so we can get smacked in the wild card game, or just so we can get smacked in the series? Yeah.
Yeah, and they're just playing like they just. It's like back to a frustrating like watch with the Phillies. You know, the starting staff has completely regressed back to where a lot of the projections had them as. I mean,
which we talked about. I mean, we talked about the innings limits, all that stuff. That it looks like they're actually wearing down. That happens.
And here's the thing that I'm frustrated by. It's like if you're gonna go make moves and bring in Asdrubal, Jose Bautista, Justin Bour, like all these guys to supplant the young talent that you have. Why didn't you go get a starter?
Yeah, or a closer.
It's not even Hamels. It's like Hap was right there. Like there was guys out there to make a move for, and I just think like they banked on the young staff keeping it up, but they didn't have any faith in their young position players, and it was just like weird. Like, why would you choose that and then not help the other team? Like, if you're serious about trying to win the division this year, your projection models should have shown that there was probably going to be some regression from your starting staff.
Yeah, I mean, Jack, you talked about it months ago. You were the first person I heard say it, and I thought it was a great point when you said it, but all these guys were headed for career innings limits, you know?
Yeah, they're still going to hit it.
And they're still going to hit it. That's the point. That's what I'm saying. So it would make sense that there would be some regression there. That's why you talked about wanting them to go get a starting pitcher towards a deadline and around that time. And look, it looks like that was a mistake. I think there's no arguing against it at this point. I think, look, the bigger macro look at it is that they weren't really trying to win this year, and even with the trades they made, they were trying to help out, but they weren't willing to put their feet, both feet in, as it were.
Yeah.
You know, they were trying to fortify the roster while also saying, 2019.
Yeah, but I'm frustrated by that as well, because now we're not seeing the young talent play. Now it's like, oh, there's
go one way or the other, and you said that at the time too.
Well, it's just annoying. Like, right now, Scott Kingery is actually playing well.
Playing better.
And I want to make sure he's good
he's
for next year.
He's a pretty decent shortstop. How about that?
He's developed, and he looks like he's just playing out
yeah,
there.
Yeah, he looks comfortable out there.
Right.
The range is great. The arm is great. He looks like he theoretically could play shortstop
right.
in Major League Baseball.
And the batting's come a long way, I think. Now
he doesn't look lost anymore.
No, it feels like he's starting to figure out what a Major League strike zone's like, and he's getting back to his instincts, which are that of a leadoff hitter, where it's see a bunch of pitches, foul a bunch of pitches off. I mean, he is seeing the most pitches per plate appearance of any Philly in the second half.
It's crazy.
Which I think is a good sign,
it's a great sign
for his future. And I think he's batting like 290 something in his last 20 games. So Kingery, I want to see him play every day. I like Asdrubal Cabrera. I think he's done some nice things. Maybe play him at third and Kingery at short or whatever. But I think it's more important now to where it's like, I got to see if Kingery's a player. I got to see. I don't need to see Justin Bourne and Carlos Santana playing third base. Like, I want to see the young guys play.
Yeah, and look, it was fun to see Carlos Santana play third base.
It actually wasn't that
bad. All right, man. That one almost turning the double play on that one play was like a legit nice play for a third baseman.
Yeah.
And look, Santana's bat has been really nice lately. You feel better about that.
Yeah, he's going to. So where are you at on 2019, Carlos Santana?
It's a great question. I never thought he wasn't going to be a part of the team.
Neither
I know a lot of people have had those. Who's going to play first base next year? Carlos Santana is going to play first base for you next year. And I think that's pretty clear.
You know how like anti-DH I am? Like, the only reason I want a DH is so that Hoskins can just be a DH.
Be a DH.
Like, I understand Hoskins' position is first
You're
base.
You're very anti-DH, too. This is a big deal.
I understand,
deal.
Like, his position is first base, but he's, a bad first. Like, Carlos Santana is way better as
way
a defensive
better.
First baseman than Rhys Hoskins is, and then he put Rhys in left field, which was like, oh, my God. And that's the only argument to be made for a DH in the NL is to get Rhys Hoskins out of the field.
That's it.
That's the only one.
Yeah. Well, you know I'm a DH guy. We'll argue about these are the things we'll argue about in the
off
season.
Well, you also hate America. So
yes, clearly. Yes. Hate America. But I think you make a really interesting point right now because, 20 games left to play? How important are those 20 games for development? Is that something where, obviously, look, they're 4.5 games out. They're not going
to... They're not dead.
Right. And they can act like it. They can't play games that way. But how important is 20 games of development for you?
I just think this would be less frustrating if it was the young guys that faltered. You know what I mean? But right now, it's like why is Jose Bautista playing over Aaron Altherr?
Yeah.
Aaron Altherr, I know I'm the Altherr guy.
You're the Altherr guy.
I know I'm the Altherr guy.
He's smoking the balls. Ah! This is what I get from Jack all the time.
His five plate appearances.
He's smoking the ball.
His five plate appearances, he has smoked the ball four times. Listen, it's like, what's the point of putting Jose Bautista out there?
Well, that's a fair question.
I just think it's frustrating to have all the old guys playing, the young guys not, and the old guys aren't performing. And it's just like, I would accept this downturn if it was the young guys playing and it wasn't the old guys they brought in to supplant the young talent. I thought they were going to bring in guys to be bench pieces to help facilitate the young guys and help the young guys down the stretch. And it's just turned into the complete opposite, where it's only the veterans they brought in are playing.
Yeah. No, and look, I get it. If you're... You can't manage a baseball game that way. If you are trying to win baseball games, you have to look at it as what lineup, what players give me the best opportunity to win this game tonight. So I understand it because those guys are here. I think it's a better question of, was it worth bringing Jose Bautista here? Was that the type of move?
I didn't get the Bautista thing.
I was fine with it. I thought he was being brought in as a bench bat. That's where it's come. Yeah.
He can't catch up to 90 right down the middle.
Yeah. He looks behind on everything.
No, I mean, that's been the story for a year and a half.
Yeah. I think, I think it's incredibly frustrating. I think frustrating is really the word of the last month and a half with this team, especially because while there were signs, we talked a lot about the run differential. We talked about those types of things where you could say, all right, maybe they're not as good as their record shows.
Yeah, I think if you're objectively watching the team all year, like, you kind of sense this coming.
Well, we talked about this a lot, right? We had how many conversations of how are they winning games,
right,
type conversations did we have?
You would ask yourself, like, once a week, how is this team in
yes,
first place?
Yes, and I think that is borne out here. I think we're starting to see that play out, but I think it's incredibly frustrating because of how tough and resilient they were the first two-thirds of the season or mm-hmm. whatever it was. It was a team where you never felt like they were out of a game. You never felt like they were out of a series. And now to see them losing these series against bad teams, bad baseball teams in games that they need to have, I think that, for me at least, has been the most frustrating part. It's yesterday against the Mets. You don't get Jacob DeGrom. You get Corey Oswalt on the hill.
Right.
This is your chance. Like, you got to win these games. The same thing with the last game in Williamsport against the Mets the last time they played him. The same thing with the series against Washington. These brutal losses coupled with the inability to rise up and play your best when it matters the most, which is even more frustrating after watching them do it against the Red Sox. We knew they had it in them. We knew that if they're locked in, if they're bringing it, Jack, that this team can compete with any team in baseball on a given night. And then to see them just drop these series and lose these important games, for me at least, that's been the most frustrating part of this whole thing.
Yeah, and it's almost like there's no urgency. Like, I don't see any, like, urgency. Like, we got to win this game, like, fight in this team. It just seems like it's just been... There's no, just, the energy's not there.
I agree with you. And that's with games they need to win.
I know.
Do you blame Kapler for that?
I So I think it's kind of the whole coaching staff, because the whole coaching staff has kind of had this philosophy, like, we're going to go on a run. Like, we're not worried. But, guys, there's like 20-some games left.
When's the run happening?
Right.
You're going to go on a run in December? I mean, what's the deal here?
And what signs are there that there's a run coming? Like, the Rhys Hoskins hot streak?
Rhys
is in a hot streak right now, and you've lost two or three games.
Yeah.
Like, I'm curious to see how it plays out, because the coaching staff has been feeding this positivity, which is, I think it's great. But I wonder if a little bit of the urgency is taken out of games because of the coaching staff's kind of lack of, we got to win this ball game tonight.
And look, I think that we've talked about it a lot. I think we have not given Kapler and the staff enough credit for being a young, new staff. Look, Gabe Kapler has never managed a baseball season before. This is his first season in Major League Baseball as a manager. So these are his first reps in these types of situations. This is the first time he's playing meaningful games down the stretch. He's coaching in meaningful games down the stretch, all that type of stuff. So I'm willing to give him and the staff a pass for that, but I'm with you. I think that he needs to learn from it. He needs to learn that it's all well and good to be positive. I'm all about that too, and I agree with Gabe when he says, you know, you're talking to grown men. Grown men don't respond to you crapping all over them. I agree with that. I don't. You know, if you treat me that way, and I'm going to be like, screw you, I don't want to work for you. You know, that's my reaction. I think there are a lot of people that way, but I think there has to be something. And look, behind closed doors, we don't know what goes down, but there has to be some urgency and a display of urgency. It feels like no one on this team is going out there every night and saying, guys, this is our season. Like, their season was on the line yesterday.
I know.
Against Corey Oswalt.
I know, and I don't know if it's much Kapler as it is the players and Rhys Hoskins. Like, Hoskins I view as the face of the franchise, the team leader, the guy that the rest of the team looks up to and says, that's our guy. We're going to get behind that guy. And I haven't seen like that kind of fire from him either.
Right. And I still blame Gabe for that, because Rhys Hoskins is a 24-year-old, 25-year-old kid playing in these games for the first time in his life too, being in this situation for the first time in his life. Like, whether or not you're first year manager, it's on Gabe. Like, Gabe has to do a better job of you. If you don't have leaders on the team who've been there, and, you know, Jake Arrieta, where the hell you at? But if you don't have guys who've been there, who've been in these games, who've been in these types of situation, trying to light a fire under that team, and if your leaders aren't doing it, you got to take more on yourself.
Yeah, I'd love to see it. I'd love to be in the locker room and just see how it's all working out, because I want to see what a pregame locker room looks like.
Me too.
Like, and maybe it's tough to get up for games when there's like 5,000 people in the crowd.
True.
It seems like that. It seems like there's something to that with this team, and maybe that's something with young teams where they go on the road and there's no one there. It's hard to get juiced for. And you see it at home. They play better at home because there's at least, you know, some semblance of a crowd there. They play their best when there seems like there's a bigger crowd on hand. And I think for a young team to go on the road and there's like no one in the stands, like, where's the sometimes players feed off the energy from the crowd. And I just don't think that that's there as well.
Yeah, I think the home road thing is a really interesting thing to look at, because it's incredible the difference. We're the best home teams in baseball, one of the worst road teams. It is, I mean, other than the teams that just don't win any games. That's a really good hypothesis for what it is, but it's something they need to look at. And it's not just, this is not, it's too big a sample size to just be a fluke. This team doesn't feel as comfortable playing on the road, and that's something that down the road they're going to have to address.
Yeah, well, it's the growth of a young team. It's the growth of we saw it with the Eagles. I mean, the Eagles weren't a great road team, and then at home they were obviously dominant.
And I think it's more of a stark difference from football to baseball, home field advantage.
Well, football is always pretty.
Means more and all that.
But it's just a fact that young teams struggle on the road, and especially when there's no one there, it sucks, and it sucks to watch, but it's the philosophy of the human mind. Like, if no one's there, there's no pressure on you, and like this one guy chirping you, maybe, like, it's just hard to get completely focused in.
And again, you know, that's one of my big things is, you know, we have to remember these guys are human beings and not just robots or whatever sent to do our bidding and play the game and dance, puppets dance. That's not what it is. They're human beings who have real human emotion and all that. I think that's a huge part of it, Jack. Before we kind of look ahead and really start to take stock of what's possible and what we hope and what we think's going to happen, let's take a quick look back. Anything outside of kind of what we talked about, obviously, with the inability to win big games they need to win, are there any signs for hope? What are some things that you've seen from this team? Obviously, Rhys Hoskins starting to hit the ball a little bit. What can you bank on? Look, if we're going to say they're only 4.5 back with 20 to play, I shouldn't say only. They're 4.5 back with 20 to play. What can you put your hope in? What can you say, hey, I think they could do it. Why? Why?
Uh-oh. Good question.
Silence.
Yeah, because it's just tough to predict right now because the offense has been inconsistent, which has been all this entire year. You can't really bank on them getting super hot unless a Reese hot streak is coming. You know, maybe, I mean, I'm in the evaluative stage where I want to see Kingery, and I think he's done some nice things. But the staff, the starting staff's taken a huge step back. I mean, Arrieta's pitching to around a 3-5, which is kind of fine for your 4 or 5 starter.
Yeah.
It's just that all the young guys that were pitching far ahead of where they are at this point had just completely taken a huge step back. Like Eflin's
a disaster.
Eflin.
I mean, I don't even know if you can roll him out there every fifth day anymore. Like, give Eichhoff to start. I mean, not that Eichhoff looked very good in the relief appearance, but, I mean, Zach Eflin is an automatic 6 earned in 3 innings right now.
Well, it's frustrating, too, because when in his 5-0 month of June, he threw 51% of fastballs. And what made him a different pitcher was that he was using his fastball more and more. He's using his four-seam fastball up in the zone. He was spotting it to both sides of the plate, no problem. And he looked like a legit starter in this league. And if you look at month by month since that, his fastball he's decreased his usage of it.
Why?
I have no idea. He's throwing his changeup more and more. His changeup's not very good. And I can't tell if it's I wonder if it's an injury thing. I don't think it'd be an injury thing. But you'd think the Phillies are looking at his peak and being like, wow, a lot of fastballs.
Yeah.
Let's do that more.
I mean, for the most analytically inclined organization, you'd think that's the type of thing that they would notice.
Right. And they just seem to have completely missed that. I mean, it was what made Eflin good was his fastball. And now he's not throwing. He's throwing his changeup more and he's getting rocked. Like, I don't know. Like, what are you doing? Like this. And the most ridiculous thing is that people.
Oh, God, please, real quick. This is.
It's the worst take in the city.
The worst take in the city. Full stop after each of those.
It's ridiculous. People think that because he got sent down, that this is the reason why he's struggling.
It's so, it's beyond stupid.
Every time I see it, I just want to bang my head through the wall.
It's such a bad take. It's an epically bad take.
It's just not even thinking.
It's not even a take. It's just stupid.
It's like there's no room for regression. It's just, well, they sent him down, you know, and messed up
his confidence. That $20,000, every time he goes out there, he's just thinking about that $20,000 he lost.
Well, that's the most ridiculous.
What do you even mean?
The most ridiculous thing is, like, people think it messed up his confidence.
It's ridiculous.
He messed up his confidence. He didn't even get sent down.
Yeah.
He was even in AAA.
It's such a bad take. I hate that take. I hate it with all of my... I hated the discussion about the thing. He's a Major League Baseball player, all right? You know what happens to Major League Baseball players? You get sent down in the minors sometimes, and then you get brought back up. It's what happens. It's the freaking sport.
And he didn't get sent down.
And he didn't get sent down.
That's the other part people
so
forget
is
about.
Eflin, what, long term, where are you at with Eflin? Is this the type of thing where you think they're more likely to in the future see the guy we saw in June more, or is the Eflin we're seeing now more Zach Eflin, or is it somewhere in the middle?
Well, I certainly would have traded him for Manny Machado.
I would have too.
Why?
I don't know. Thinking back on all the things that happened this season, the Phillies won't trade Zach Eflin straight up for Manny Machado may have been one of the dumbest that happened.
It just didn't make any sense. Like,
it's so ridiculous. It didn't make any sense at the time.
I know. I don't want to completely write Eflin off because I thought that month was really good. And I wonder, I can't get behind. I don't understand why he stopped using his fastball. Maybe if he gets that back, but it's certainly, he's nothing more than a 4 at this point.
That's what I think too.
So a little frustrating end of the season for Zach Eflin. Vince Velasquez seems like he's back to being Vince Velasquez. 5 innings, 1,000 pitches.
Such a bummer, man. That was such a fun stretch we had there. With him.
Like, where did the two-seamer go that was starting at people's hip and it was 94, mm-hmm. 93, and then you jump up to 97?
Well, how much of that is wear and tear? I mean, you pitched, you know, D1 college pitcher
D2,
over here.
I got D1 looks. Okay?
D2 college pitcher.
I need 1,100 to get to Georgetown.
Trying to help,
and I couldn't
to help
do it.
You out here, Fritz, all right? How much of that is wear and tear? How much of that is something to really worry about long term? With Velasquez, with Eflin, Pivetta, these guys were, it just, obviously it's going to look sharper when you're fresher, but how much of a worry is this for the long term?
Well, I almost think it's important that they're getting these reps because hopefully in the next coming years when they're actually trying to compete for the World Series, that they're going to be used to pitching in these kind of games. And pitch this long into the season. So I think it's just natural wear and tear. I mean, you've seen it with Eflin. Like, Eflin in June He was pretty fresh. He was finishing through the ball. He was hitting the outside corner with his fastball. And it's just natural when you get a little tired as you get longer into the season, it starts leaking because your legs get tired. So, and it's just harder to bounce back. And that's why legs are more important than your arm when it comes to pitching. So if you look at Aaron Nola, he used to have this problem, but he spent all offseason just bulking up his legs, and now he's got tree trunks down there. And like same thing with Halliday. Like Halliday used to have tree trunks. And Aaron Nola's gotten to that point. It's great. Arrieta's gotten to that point. I have no fear of those guys finishing out the season. I think this since this is their first time really going through pitching this deep into a season, they'll come back next year much more prepared, knowing what they're going to need to go through.
Do you worry at all about some residual issues early next season from the, you know, not Verducci-esque type of jump, but the larger jump in workload for these guys?
No, because I think they're going to spend all offseason. They know where they need to get their body to. And I think they're going to spend all offseason being like, this is where I need to be. And they'll be much more prepared for next
season. All right, Pivetta is the only one you really haven't touched on. Favorite, your baby, Nick Pivetta.
Let me put it this way.
Does Jill know that you guys already have a baby? Is this by the way, it's fun to do a show with Jack and actually see a wedding ring on his
finger. Yeah.
Look at that.
Yeah, don't worry. I was still watching on vacation.
We all know you were. We told you to stop. You wouldn't.
Well, I couldn't.
We'll get to it. I want to hear the Jack Fritz vacation stories. That's coming. Don't worry.
So Pivetta is still, he doesn't have a pitch to get out lefties. And the guys just foul off a bunch of pitches. His curveball hasn't been as like dominant as it was for the first 2 months of the season. Like really in a month and a half, he hasn't had that Nick Pivetta curveball that we all know he has in there. Now his last start was better. He was throwing his slider more and he's actually getting it over for strikes. It's just not a good slider. But if it gives a batter something else to think about, that's important. Nick Pivetta just needs to spend all offseason working on a third pitch. I don't care what it is. I hope it's a changeup. He threw like 13% changeups two starts ago, which was the most of the season. And then he kind of went back to not using his changeup as much. So if I'm Nick Pivetta do I want to say it?
Yeah, you do.
I do want to say it.
Yeah, just say it.
He's a pitch away from being John Smoltz. He is a splitter. I swear to God, he is a splitter away from being Smoltz Strasburg. Like
I love when you say the things that you text me out loud in a microphone. I love it.
I think you
went Strasburg when you texted it to me, but that's
I want to see a splitter so bad because it would set him apart, man.
He's a splitter away from being a Hall of Famer. I love it.
He is going to finish with Cy Young votes next year.
I love it.
I don't care anyone says. He's gonna, like Nick Pivetta's in his second year, 25 years old. He's going to pitch to a 4-5.
I love
it. Maybe he's Robbie Ray.
Look at this. I like this. All right.
Hold on.
He's a right-hander.
He is at 11.9 Ks per nine.
It's good.
Which is the best K per nine season since Curt Schilling's in 1999.
Wow, really?
Yeah. Like it's not some fluke. Like I'm not on freaking Mars. Okay, the guy doesn't walk anyone, and he strikes.
I love when you get super defensive about your Nick Pivetta takes.
I don't understand how you can't see how good he's gonna be.
I love it.
And even if he's not a starter, he's gonna be dominant out of the pen. No matter what, Nick Pivetta is going to be good.
It's a valuable asset.
I will.
No matter what. All right.
Carry it to my grave.
Here's what I'll throw at you. You threw the Carlos Santana one at me. Arrieta, Nola, locks to be in the rotation next year, provided some weird injury things don't happen or whatever. Are all three of the other guys in the starting five when the season starts? Obviously, there's all kinds of free agency and stuff, but just right now, September 10th, if you had to bet on the starting rotation for next year, Pivetta, Eflin, Velasquez, who's in, who's out?
Pivetta's in, obviously.
John Smoltz, so I think we should know that was coming.
And before I get ripped on Twitter, he's John Smoltz if he gets a splitter.
Yes. You didn't say now.
I didn't say he's John Smoltz now.
Yes. But very clear.
He needs a third pitch. I've been very open that he needs a third pitch. Yes. Okay. I am done evaluating pitchers. This has been a big step for me. So like I used to love Tyler Skaggs and I used to love like Nick Pivetta. But what I realized, they don't have a third pitch. They need every pitcher to reach their level of talent needs a third pitch.
I like that.
You saw Patrick Corbin this year. Anyway. So I think Velasquez is, and I think Eflin's going to mold into like a Brad Peacock kind of role.
Ooh, I could see that, especially with the increased velocity we saw this year. He could be that guy.
Yeah, like the long man, and they go get a legitimate starting pitcher.
I think if I had to bet, that's the way I would bet too. I think Pivetta and Velasquez more likely than Eflin to be in the rotation.
Well, I just think they're going to start morphing Eflin into like a long reliever kind of guy, and they're going to get a fifth starter from somewhere else.
I'm pretty
would think.
Sure that the Angels will take him straight up for Mike Trout. I heard so.
Right,
but the Phillies don't want to do that.
Yeah, we'll see. So if you bend our arms
straight up for Manny Machado. Oh my God.
Yeah, it was like at the time. I understand because he has 6 years of service time left,
mm-hmm.
but it's Manny Machado, yeah, and it's Zach Eflin. Like, let's just calm down for Mm-mm. a second there, buddy.
Mm-mm. All right, Jack. Oh, I'm looking at this, by the way. We'll get to this coming up, too.
Yes, of course.
Astro Ball. We'll do a little High Hopes book review.
Okay.
On the High Hopes podcast.
Totally down.
I'm excited about that. All right, before we get to all the fun stuff, coming up, we have three against the Nationals starting tonight. Three against the Mets and the Marlins, or the Marlins and the Mets. Nine games.
Marlins are next weekend, so.
Okay, so then the Mets this weekend, then the Marlins. They have nine.
Or this weekend.
So then it's the Marlins this weekend, then the Mets after that.
Yeah.
Nine straight games at home. And then it's that 11-game gauntlet with, three or four in Atlanta, four in Colorado, three in Atlanta. We all know they have to win whatever. At this point, they have to win like six out of seven against Atlanta or whatever. But we all know that those 11 games will make or break them, but in reality, these nine home games are going to make or break them because you need to be in a position going into that last stretch to even for it to matter.
Yeah, well, especially because they've been so good at home.
And they're a home team, exactly. But again, they can't win series, especially against bad teams, Jack. What are you looking for here? What should we as Phillies fans be looking for over this nine-game stretch? How many do they need to win? Can they do what they need to do? Where's your head at?
My head is at I want to see how they react to being in the situation. Like, I don't understand how if you lose that series in New York, there's no one there, and you don't capitalize on some of the Braves' falters. Like, this is I'm really curious to see if they have a sense of urgency tonight. And if they, and not tonight, but in this home series, and starting
starts tonight
with Eric Fetty, who's all over the place.
He was your guy for a little bit.
I like Eric Fetty.
Eric Fetty.
No, I like Eric Fetty.
But still,
but he's a
Arrieta
young pitcher.
You should have the advantage on the hill tonight.
Wait, I think it's like the fourth time we said this. Arrieta needs to earn that money tonight.
I've said it 500 times this year.
I go to sleep saying
I feel like every time the guy takes it, I'm like, this is what they paid Jake Arrieta for.
I know.
Well, that worked out.
I know. So I even if they don't make the playoffs, right? I want to see them finish out the year strong. Show me there's something to be excited for looking into next year. Show me you can bounce back from a tough month. Like, they had a tough month at just about the worst time you could have a tough month.
Just about it.
Right.
Yeah. It's the worst time.
The worst time to possibly have a rough stretch. I want to see them bounce back from that. I want to see them finish the year strong. If they lose out in the division by, like, two games, three games, and they're fighting down the end, and you saw a sense of, listen, nut up or shut up time.
Yes.
And I see that I'm content. But if you just end the season and it's just dog crap and just boring, terrible baseball, it's unacceptable.
Yeah, and it would be a real bummer from multiple angles. I think first and foremost, like you kind of hit on there, that it would just be really good for this team to get those kind of reps. We talked about this a lot.
Hopefully
I think,
with the young guys.
I think it matters. I think it matters whether, even for the guys who are definitely going to play, the Rhys Hoskins of the world, Alfaro will be playing, young guys who will get reps, and King of Real play, like those guys will get reps, and these pitchers, like you mentioned, the young pitchers, even Aaron Nola's never pitched in games like that before. I think all that matters.
And to learn how to pitch this late into the season.
Yes, yeah, it matters. To maybe your arm doesn't feel fresh.
Yep.
You're worn down. You need to learn how to get guys out.
And hopefully Arrieta's been teaching them.
Yeah.
Hopefully.
Yeah.
What's interesting, though,
I'm not putting anything on Arrieta anymore.
what's so interesting is that they brought back Brad Lidge to help, and mm-hmm. they brought back Jimmy Rollins down in Miami.
I love it.
And it's smart.
Get the winners in there.
It's smart. So it's interesting. There's a lot to watch towards the end of the season. If they just like
Problem, right? And I think that it's a bigger problem in the sense that I think right now, if the season ended today, and granted the last month and a half has sucked and it's been very disappointing, but I think the vast majority of real Phillies fans, not the people who just want to hate on Gabe Kapler or whatever, but I think the vast majority of real Phillies fans, when you could step back from this season, step back from the last month and a half, step back from the why can't they beat the freaking Mets of it all, I think you will step back and say, hey, this is a real step forward for this franchise. Like, this season is a positive. They have so much young talent moving into the future. They have all the money in the world. You should, maybe everyone doesn't, but you should feel good about the infrastructure here, the general manager, the coach, all that type of stuff. All that, I feel like we should all feel very positive about this team heading into next season. But like you said, if they just continue this string of losing 2-3, losing 3-3, crapping the bed when it matters most, I don't know if people are going to be able to step back and have that same type of feeling.
But I also think at the same time, they've created a lot of questions about the future of the team. Like, how many real blue chippers do the Phillies have right now?
Yeah,
I mean, there's Hoskins.
Hoskins and Nola.
But Hoskins is the streakiest player in baseball.
Yeah, I think that ultimately, look, again, 24, 25 years old, played 170 games, 180 games, whatever, in his career. And what you see is really good, 185, 190, whatever it is. I think you could say, mate, Hoskins, you're right. He's not a no doubt about it, lock it in blue chipper, but I think...
Well, he's pretty close.
I think he will be, is my point. I think from an offensive perspective, at least, he will be a blue chip player.
Yeah, I think he's great. I think
and
Hoskins...
Noel is a clear blue
chip. I don't have questions about those guys, but there is rising questions about Scott Kingery, about Jorge Alfaro,
sure.
Roman Quinn, if he can stay healthy, Odubel.
Nick Williams.
I mean, we're a very pro-Odubel podcast,
yes.
But he's been terrible.
He's been awful.
For about 2 months now.
Yeah.
And we keep waiting for the Odubel Herrera hot streak.
And that real issue with Odubel, and we've talked about this a lot, it's all an issue, but the fact that he's playing bad defense now. You know,
better the last like 2 weeks.
Right. But I'm talking about on the season as a whole. I mean, he was a good defensive outfielder, and he hasn't looked like that.
Well, it says Reese Hoskins in left field, which, you know,
doesn't help. Yeah, it makes him look worse. It's a fair point.
And Nick Williams in right field for most of the season.
Not great.
So that doesn't help. So
they are as bad a defensive baseball team as I can.
They're the worst defensive baseball team I've ever seen.
And by far, no question, the worst defensive baseball team for a team that was competitive I've ever seen. It's not even close.
Yeah, and they would have been the first team. Well, no, obviously, the season's not over. But if they make the playoffs, they're the first team in MLB history to have a batting average below .237 make the playoffs.
I mean, again, it goes back to the whole, how are they even competing to begin with of it all?
Right.
You know, it really does. You look at all the numbers, all the advanced analytics, everything, offensive, defensive. I mean, this team should stink.
They should stink. And unfortunately, it's reared its ugly head recently.
Yes.
But there's legitimate questions about the upside of the future of this team. I think there is. Like, I think Alfaro's gonna be good. I think his last 20 games, he's batting .270 with a .351 OBP and two homers. Still striking out a ton, but there's legitimate signs there. Nick Williams had a really positive season. Where are you at with John Mayle?
It's a great question.
Who the hell has gotten better under John Mayle?
Nobody. Not a single guy.
Every single player has gotten worse.
Think about it. As great as Rick Kranitz has been, and as much praise as we heaped, deservedly so, on Rick Kranitz, you're right. We have not done a good enough job of calling out John Mayle because he hasn't done a very good job. For those who don't know, the hitting coach. For
the only player that's had a really, two players, positive season have been Franco and Nick Williams.
Yep.
But everyone, like Altair.
And even then, Williams has regressed lately.
There's the injury, but he doesn't look the same.
He doesn't look the same.
He's not scoring up as many balls as he was. I mean, a double major step back. Hoskins, I think
no, at best lateral.
A hitting coach really won't really affect Hoskins.
Santana, he's his own hitting coach.
Yeah, Santana I'm not worried about. He's been much better recently, but for the most part of the season he's been bad. Cesar step back hitting wise, been hot recently. Kingery mostly bad, but even like the guys that have brought in, like Azdrubal.
It's a great point.
I
don't know how much Mayle has to do with the vets who come in and do their thing, but regardless, I think on the whole, it's been bad.
It has been bad, and two teams that have been ascending in their World Series run have gotten rid of him. I mean,
Astros, I didn't think about that.
The Astros got rid of him. Read that.
Oh,
him and
yeah.
JD Martinez. Like, he was the first one to his credit, he was the first one that was like, JD, like, you're just not very good. Like, you need to go and figure it all out because you have a terrible swing.
And he did.
He figured it out. And then they got rid of him. After he came back and was like, guys, I swear I'm good. So I was reading Astro Ball. He goes into the office of Jeff Luhnow, and he's like, I went to Mexico. I figured out everything. Like, this is my year. And he barely played in spring training. They got rid of him. They released him. Goes to the Tigers and just starts raking in spring training. And he just turns. They're playing against the Astros. He turns, finds Jeff Luhnow, and gives him like a little wink.
Nice.
And then JD Martinez turned into JD Martinez.
Yeah.
So Mayle, there's a little thing there. But other than that, like, the Cubs moved on from him. The Cubs had a really frustrating offense, I thought, last year.
Mm-hmm.
And now look at them. I mean, Javi's an MVP candidate.
Yeah. Like, it's a really fair point.
It's interesting.
It is interesting.
I'm not completely
You're
out.
Not condemning him yet, but...
They're
looking great.
There's legitimate concern there, and I'm not going to blame it on launch angle. Like,
How much of it do you blame on the over organizational approach as a whole? We've talked about this a lot this season, but the whole, you know, waiting deep in counts, walking, and not really necessarily, if you see a good pitch early in a bat, don't go get it, all that type of stuff.
Well, they preach that they're selectively aggressive, which I think is a great approach. You know, then you're looking for a pitch you can drive. But they haven't, like, one out of every five games, they exemplified that. And they seem to only do it against pitchers that are really good. Like Noah Syndergaard, they own Noah Syndergaard. Mm-hmm. They don't own Max Scherzer, but they've beaten Scherzer twice. Like they rise up to where they need to rise up, and they falter against dog crap pitchers.
It's crazy, right? And I think it makes it more frustrating, because I feel like we should just label the title of the show should just be frustrating, because we've said it 100 times. But that's why it's more frustrating, because you know they have it in them. You know, you could see the way they play against the Red Sox. You could see the way they play against Scherzer. You can go like, oh, where? Why isn't that team coming out every night?
Well, the Philly style offense, it has worked. Like when they are completely focused and dialed in and are playing Philly style offense, which is working the counts, getting on base,
waiting for big innings.
Yeah. The bad part is that they get guys on base and then they can't bring them home, which has been another frustrating part of this entire season. They need a guy that can drive those runs home.
Yeah, they need Bryce Harper. They need Mike Trout. They need Manny Machado. They need one of those guys. Like, they do. It's like you talked about with the blue chippers and all that. I think the skeleton of this team that is here now, when you think about the guys and the potential, look, not everyone's going to hit the minors. We all know that. But I think they have enough depth of talent there that they will have some hits.
Yeah, but they have a bunch of depth, but they don't have the top guys.
Well, that's what I'm saying. I'm saying they'll have guys who will help be part of the major league roster. I'm saying they need those top guys. And I think they're going to. I think whether it's Harper, Machado, Trout, like one of those guys is going to be here. I really feel confidently about that.
They better, because I've suppressed this for long enough to where like I try not to think about it, because once I start thinking about them possibly striking out on Machado or Harper,
I go
into like a really dark place. Like,
I think I've long thought that Mike Trout will be here one way or another.
Yeah, so do I.
I still believe that.
You think this is the offseason they're going to trade him?
It might be, man. Look, the Ohtani injury matters. The fact that
if he gets surgery, he's out till 2019.
Yeah, and think about that division they're in. I mean, the Astros aren't going anywhere.
Nope.
And
the A's aren't, well, unless they
trade. Who knows with the A's? But the A's are 30 games over 500. The Mariners are a better team than you are. And then you look at the rest of the American League. The Yankees aren't going anywhere. The Red Sox aren't going anywhere. The Indians aren't going anywhere the next couple years. But, you know, whatever.
You see it coming.
You see it coming. Not when you could sort. They'll win that division again next year. That division's dog crap, all that stuff. But I think that the Angels, if they, and again, who knows? They're the Angels. They've been run poorly for a while. But if the Angels step back and look at the situation, I think they're going to trade Mike Trout this offseason.
And especially if they go to him and say, hey, we want to sign
you
up.
Well, that's what they'll do. They'll say, Mike, here's a record-breaking contract. Will you sign it? And if he says no, they'll trade him. If he says yes, they'll keep him.
Because there's such a big difference in the package you get for 2 years left on a contract rather than one.
Night and day.
Right. So,
I mean, like that. Let's put it this way. If they trade Mike Trout this offseason, who knows about Will? It should be the richest package ever returned for a Major League Baseball.
Yeah, not even, it won't even be close.
Like, it has to be.
And if you're looking for a prime example of what not to do, it's what the Orioles did.
Yep.
Which, hold on to.
Wait until the last possible second.
To trade a guy you know is not coming.
And they still did they still got a nice player for him. Like,
I'm surprised with what they got for him.
Me too. Because they got lucky. There were enough teams competing who wanted his services that they were able to drive it up. But this offseason, if they trade Trout, and that's the interesting thing, is the Phillies are maybe one of five teams in baseball who have the depth, the salary room, everything they want to do to just do that.
Yeah. And it feels like Middleton would just be like, just do it.
Whatever. Whatever it takes.
So is Nola completely off limits for you?
Yeah.
Hoskins?
No.
And that's it?
Aaron Nola is the only player on this in this organization who I would not trade for.
And Nick Pivetta.
Look, I don't think they trade Reese. I don't think that's part of it. I think Reese, you know,
I don't
obviously.
I'm not 100% sure they'd have to give up everything.
No, I think it's, look, a package.
Stars don't get traded for everything.
No.
It's just not how it works.
Look, Sixto and it'll be more the type of, I don't think it'll be major league guys as much. Maybe one or two.
I think Adubel will be in it.
I think it's that type of guy, but I think it's more like your top five prospects. So, it's like Sixto, Medina, like, you know, bomb, like whoever people feel like the Angels have to, you know, see who they like the most. But I think you're willing to give up your top four or five prospects.
Would start the deal with Adubel and Cesar just to create some space for us. Like, I think Kingery should be our second baseman next year. Oh, that's another thing. Cesar next year, Like,
yeah, we talked a lot about this early in the season when Cesar was playing so well.
And he's been playing better the last, like,
yeah,
four games.
I'm with you. I'm fine to move on.
I think it's time. This is the offseason move on from him.
I'm fine with it.
It's too.
Look, what you hope is he has a hot 20 games to end it out, and then, you know, the numbers look better and you move him.
Yeah, he's a good player.
He has value.
A good second baseman. But you paid Scott Kingery that money to be your second baseman in the future. So
I agree with you there.
So I'm good. I think this is the last season of Cesar. I talked to Franzen about it, and he thinks that if you put Kingery at second base, you're going to see a completely different player.
With the name drop.
Which I don't. It was on the pod. It was on our podcast, so
kidding.
It wasn't really
I'm
a
kidding.
Name drop.
I'm just kidding.
I'm
kidding.
Helping our podcast grow. That's what I'm doing. That's what I'm doing here. But if you put Kingery at second base, maybe you get him more comfortable.
Jack Fritz, friends with former Major League Baseball players.
It's like shocking. Got a good amount of friends.
Look at
baseball.
You, this guy over here, big time, Jackie, big
well,
time.
They know. They look at me. They say, "This guy played.
This guy. He played."
So I got a take, and
I'm ready for
I've
it.
I've been giving a lot of takes.
All right, real quick, before we do it, real quick, 9 games at home. How many do they have to win?
7.
7 is what I said. How many do you think they win?
5.
Yeah, I think 5-2. I think they win a series, but yeah, I'm with you. Okay, take away.
So I got a take, and I've been squatting on this one for about 24 hours.
Jack texted me yesterday and this morning with just, I've got a take.
I think John Middleton deserves a lot of blame for how this season went down.
Whoa!
So
hold up. That's a take. I'm intrigued. Lay it on me.
It's a take. I like Matt Klentak. And I think Klentak had a different view of how he wanted the season to go. I think what Klentak wanted to do was play all the young guys and see how it went down. And at the deadline, bring in a guy that can then help the team a little bit. But what they did was they brought in all these old guys who I can just see Middleton just going to Klentak and being like, we need this, we need that, we need this. And I think he got too involved.
Wow.
I think John Middleton, and I mostly like involved owners.
Oh, see, I hate involved owners, but go ahead.
Well, we saw Jeff Lurie worked out. I'm worried that he got too involved and it clouded the judgment on this season. And I just didn't. I don't know why Jose Bautista is here. I don't know why he's here. I don't know why Justin Bour is here. I understand as Drupal for if he can play short and he can play third base, he can play second base whenever he wants to plant or not. But he should not be playing every freaking day. I want to see who the keepers are here.
Mm-hmm.
And I think John Middleton got so obsessed with making the playoffs. And you just got to be the one seed, or you got to win the division. You got to get in the playoffs so we can sell more tickets. That it clouded his judgment of where this team was, and it's made this even more frustrating because you're watching old guys who probably shouldn't be here down the stretch instead of seeing if your young talent has something there.
I like that take. Look, it's always good when you can come with a hot-ish take that can never be proved wrong. I think it's a really good.
To be honest,
very good work right there.
And
we'll never know, but I could see it.
Sure. But look at their moves.
Yeah,
all their moves are that of a team that rushed into it,
mm-hmm.
and they tried to get their cake and eat it too, and they for the most part did. But
now they're throwing up because of it.
Yeah, well, it's just
too much cake, Jack.
It's too much Bautista. It really comes down to Bautista, and I like the Wilson Ramos addition. I really do. I think he's awesome, but Alfaro's hitting well. And Wilson Ramos won't be here next year.
Probably not. Unlikely.
Unlikely he'll be here. Although I wouldn't hate it if they brought him back.
If a nice one-year deal, boom, bring it.
So I just think Middleton pushed all the chips in on a team that you didn't see.
Well, all the chips is not fair. I mean,
he didn't push all the chips.
They gave up Franklin Killame and
cash. Klentak did a really good job
of
not giving up anything for these players. But I think he got so punch drunk that he's like, well, if I can not get, I'll just take Bautista.
You get Bautista for free? Sure.
Yeah. And it's
the Wilpons will take a quarter for him. Let's do it.
I was thinking about this on Saturday.
You got another take.
Yeah. No. Dude, like, I know this is a Phillies podcast, but can we talk about what the Mets are doing to David Wright?
Yes, we totally can.
So this is like Chase Utley.
I know.
This would be like Chase Utley coming back from like career-threatening injuries.
Yes, literally. He is their Chase Utley.
Minus
winning us a World Series.
And the Mets just being like, we don't feel like paying. Or the Phillies just being like, we don't feel like paying you, Chase Utley, so you're just going to sit on the bench.
Dude, there are people at Citi Field with free David Wright signs.
The guy was the face of your franchise. He wants to come back and play for the Mets.
Yeah, for a team that's done. And because of cash. That, thank God, like Middleton, you know, you might have ripped him a little bit there. We're very happy to have John Middleton.
And let me just say, I like John Middleton.
Yes.
I think he's going to be this offseason is very important for Middleton.
Huge. And look, he's going to open it up.
I have no confidence. I don't have any fear of that. Yeah. It's just that this season I thought he missed.
And I think that's a potential. I mean, we don't know the answer, but I think if that were the case, I would agree with you that I think that was a mistake on his part.
Right. But the Mets.
Mets, man. Can you imagine having the Wilpons as your owner? Hey, maybe don't get Bernie Madoff all your money.
Hey, maybe I'll be best friends with Bud Selig.
Yeah, like, that
the,
too.
The Wilpons, having the best baseball market in the city.
It's a travesty for baseball. I love seeing the Mets suck.
In the country.
There's nothing, and for the world,
it's the best baseball market in the world.
Yes.
And it has the cheapest owner in sports.
By far. And an owner who is like, I don't even know if viable, like to spend money if he wants to. He's lost it all. Like,
terrible for baseball.
Oh, it is so bad, but I love it because screw the Mets. But I'm with you. It is bad for baseball. Just like you know, like I hate the Knicks, but I obviously think if the Knicks are good, it's better for the NBA and it's fun and all that. Same type of thing here.
I agree. And low-key, very concerned about the future of like Wheeler, DeGrom, and Syndergaard if they keep it together.
Yeah, I agree with you.
Wheeler's taking a huge step forward.
Yeah.
But we're not a Mets podcast.
We're not a Mets podcast. Speaking of which, we're not an Astros podcast either, but... Astro Ball by Ben Ryder. You actually read a book.
I did. I read 220 pages in my flight home.
Look at you.
Yeah, I got it. I went into work real quick. I read the whole thing. It was crazy.
Very proud of you.
I haven't like read a book like it's an entirety.
That's why I said you read a book.
Yeah.
Proud of you.
Yeah. I usually make it like three quarters of the way through a book and then I stop.
I'm a big book guy.
I know you are. That's why I brought Astro Ball.
I'm reading a book that's 1,400 pages right now.
Why?
Because I've never read a Stephen King book before and people said I should read The Stand. So I'm reading The Stand.
Sounds miserable.
Super long, man. It's freaking thick.
But anyway. Astro Ball is a really interesting, the way that they built it, built up the Astros. And they talk about all their... They got lucky. They got really lucky.
It takes some luck.
They got really lucky. And they were trying to trade Dallas Keuchel. They didn't want Dallas Keuchel. He turned into a
Cy Young winner.
Cy Young guy. Jose Altuve, he came to the first Astros tryout. They said, we don't want you.
Yeah, you're 5'5", get out of
here.
Yeah,
he came back the next day, and they're like, all right, fine. Like, we'll bring you on.
It's amazing.
And they got lucky throughout the way. They also messed up a lot. Like, they took Brady Aiken, terrible pick.
Yep.
But they made up for that by taking Bregman the year after, so it was fine.
Yeah, took Mark Appel.
Mark Appel over Chris Bryant. Like, imagine if that team had Chris Bryant.
You can't imagine. It's so insane to think about. Like, they could have Chris Bryant.
I know, but...
And they made some good moves. Like, Correa was not projected to be the number one pick the year that they took him. They jumped him up a bit, mostly because he was cheaper, was what everyone said.
Right, they went
said,
under slot.
But it worked out.
Because they got McCullers later in the draft.
Yep.
And the one thing in reading Astro Ball, and I read The Cubs Way, is that... They had legitimate high upside talent guys. And when I step back and look at the Phillies, it's like Nola, that they thought Nola was going to be a three, by the way, just like Pete McKenna.
Just like everyone.
Just like everyone did. Yeah. And when I look at the Phillies, I think Hoskins is a potential blue chipper. I think Nola is. But the hitting upside, it's not of the young cores of the Astros or the Cubs.
I agree.
And they both kind of went through the same kind of process, which makes it even... more frustrating.
Mm-hmm.
Like they both effectively tanked to get higher picks. But the Phillies, Moniak, tell you what, great end of the season.
Ooh, Mickey Moniak era.
Oh man,
still coming.
I would give up so much just to have Harry Callis.
Mickey Moniak.
Amazing. Great end of the season. But like Nick Senzel's amazing. I would have very much liked Nick Senzel.
Yeah, Nick Senzel will be in the major league. I mean, already has been.
He should
but he
be.
Will. Yeah,
well, he
got hurt, but
he got injured.
And he will be a major league a contributor before Mickey Moniak.
Right. And
Jason Groom looks. I mean, he had Tommy John, but he looked very good before that. There are other guys you could have taken who
they've just
looked
kinda,
like they could be good.
They've kind of just been meh at the top of drafts.
Yeah,
and in order for a team to reach its peak, it needs to hit on those kinds.
I think that's fair, and I love the Alec Baum pick. I think that was a great pick.
Things be really good.
Cornelius Randolph starting to not suck a little bit, too. No.
Not in.
He's done. Yeah, it's a shame.
Haseley's good.
But you're right. Look, I think if you look at this Phillies franchise and say their biggest worry is they don't have those top tier guys, I think it's a fair takeaway, and I think that's why they're going to be so invested in Harper, Trout,
Machado. Well, listen, getting one of those guys is
paramount. It's everything.
It's imperative.
Yeah.
If you are serious about winning a World Series in the next like 3 years,
I agree
years,
with you. Jackie.
You need one of those guys.
Costa Rica.
Costa Rica's great.
Was it fun?
It was great.
Jack's married.
I'm married now.
You cried during the ceremony, in case you haven't heard.
You cried during my vows. You keep bringing this. You've literally told everyone that I've cried. And I said, yeah, well, guess what? He cried when I read my vows.
Yeah.
So
yeah, I was in tears. You always bawling.
You leave that one out.
Bawling.
Yeah.
It was nice. They were nice vows.
They were good vows. Yeah. Or I worked the Phillies.
They were good vows.
I worked the Phillies into my vows.
Well, it was funny because before it, Fritz was like, oh, it's going to be funny. I threw some.
No.
I threw a joke or two in there.
Yeah, I made it lighthearted, and I finished it with sappy stuff.
Yeah, you were emotional.
Of course, it's I was good. Emotional. Anyway,
I love it. So, it's a compliment to you.
I don't see the compliment. I really don't. So I went to Costa Rica, and I watched Nola versus Scherzer because I wasn't going to miss that.
Because, of course.
Come on. You think I'm going to miss that? And
I told my wife I was watching a Phillies game on her honeymoon. I don't even know.
It was great. I was so happy.
Feels very cool.
And then the last day, I had a first allergic reaction. It wasn't even a reaction.
I forgot about this.
I had some tuna, and I think they mishandled the tuna. And all of a sudden, I had hives, and my neck was on fire, and I was like, doing all the nasty stuff.
Not great.
And then I called a Costa Rican doctor, and they came in 15 minutes to my hotel room, and it was like, hey, so either a shot in your butt or you're gonna be fine, or do you want an IV? So I gave the guy $80 in cash, and I got an IV, and I was good.
You
didn't
do the shot in the butt?
I did not take the shot in the butt for $50. I paid an extra $30 for the IV.
That's good. Look at
so
you.
I did that, and it was really, listen, looking back on it, the Costa Rican doctor comes in, another guy who doesn't speak English. So that was, like, I was just not ready for that.
Uh-huh.
And he is, you know, whatever. And then he asked Jill, he's like, hey, can I go out on the balcony and take some pictures real quick? And he's on Instagram, and his flashlight is his phone flashlight when he's trying to find my vein to put the IV in. So, yeah, it was, looking back, I didn't really have a choice.
Did he make you better, Jack?
He made me better.
Well, that's all that matters.
But,
right?
If I was taking a holistic look at myself, probably a bad decision.
All right, what is the, and we'll get out of here, but what is the number one way you are different now that you're married that you were not before the last time you spoke to our fine, wonderful, beautiful listeners?
Well, I am by myself a lot during the day now, so I just watch, like today I was watching both the Chiefs Chargers game and the Vikings 49ers game. So basically I'm watching a lot more, I'm reading a lot more, I'm listening to podcasts a lot more, so... If you thought,
get married if you feel like watching more TV.
Well, it's just now I have more free time to just like.
Oh, because of the wedding. So you took that as a not planning the wedding. What about being married? Do you feel different, Jack?
No, it's much more fun. Like it's like we have a fun, you know, thing going on. So
you're
it's like
hey wifey.
Yeah,
and
yeah, yeah.
Say, hey husband.
Yeah, she makes healthy food now. Like it's scary. Like we went to the supermarket. And I was looking at all the stuff she was getting, and it was all just like organic, like gluten free.
Not cool.
And I was just like, this is my life. No. This is my life. But I can't complain because I don't cook. So
look at that.
I just eat whatever's put in front of me.
I can't tell if that was an endorsement for marriage or not.
I enjoy it. I like being able to consume more sports.
All right, Phillies, win 7-9. We'll be back somewhere in the middle of that. We'll talk this week, later this week.
Yeah, I guess later this week.
Yeah, we'll be back.
Yeah, sounds good.
Okay. Go, Phillies, stop sucking.
Please stop sucking.
We have high hopes.
For our own sanity.
Talk to you guys later.